It's 6:30 even by the Borough Council clock, so we'll begin. We start with the minutes. Anybody got any comments on minutes?
I think my name is again like the L in the minutes. Not in the names bit, whereas later on when names for the...
So it comes on and it drops off?
Yes, it's correct at the very beginning, and then when it's who's on the task and finish group, I think it's 2 hours.
Okay. Okay, anything
it
else?
Should have one.
We need to... So you can
sign
it,
but I have to make changes.
Apologies.
Councillor Powell, who's been substituted by Councillor McEwen.
And public question time. None. Councillor session, none. Members' items, none. Called in items, none. Takes us to officers' reports. And we start with item number 7A, which is the project's update, and that's over to Dean.
Michelle.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even see Michelle there. How could I miss you?
So, ordinarily, you get a report through that basically sets out the position across the range of projects, but since we've met, I think we're in November, there hasn't been a huge amount to actually detail in a report, other than to say that the acquisition of the Guildhall Shopping Centre was reported to Cabinet at the beginning of December, and that gained approval, so that transaction continues, the same with the co-op, and probably, well in advance of the time that Scrutiny next meets, I'll be able to give you a more detailed programme of the works in front of the railway station. So it seemed a little bit overkill to try and put that into the report. The other main item to report back on is, again in November, and I can't quite remember the timing of this, we got the announcement for the levelling up funding for the station gateway. So it was basically just to advise that officers from the Borough Council, the County Council and London and Continental Railways, who we'd worked with on the Strategic Regeneration Framework document for the Gateway, we all came together, I think it was the week before Christmas, to basically look through what we need to do to start drawing down that funding, kind of a delivery programme. So in the next probably 2 months, again, we'll have a clearer picture on what next steps are there, so we can do a bit more of a detailed update next time we meet, if that's okay.
Yep. People happy with that?
Just on the station gateway, station approach.
Yeah.
The works for that in the last report we saw would be starting before Christmas, but have not.
Yeah, no, that was we were agreeing the contract before Christmas with a view to materials being ordered and such like. There's been a slight change in the programme. We will start on site within the coming months, but I can't say what the dig in the ground date will be, because that's linked back into ordering of materials, which has a ridiculously long lead in time. What we are trying to do is be as mindful as we can of the works that are already ongoing, sort of, I want to say around the corner, but round on Chell Road, because obviously that's been having quite the impact on the wider road network, so we'll be working with the County Council just to make sure that whatever we're doing, we can minimise the impact of that.
Money.
The Town Centre Task and Finish Group that we discussed in September, have we got any updates on that, any news on them, and that's going to be handled?
We met last night, no?
The first meeting of the Task and Finish Group was yesterday. I think first meeting really just to establish the terms of reference for the group, which I think and to agree a chair. So I think there's a further meeting organised in February. Action really out of the meeting was to agree or do piecework, just to understand what events are taking place, and then I think the group wants to start thinking about ideas for the future, what events could be brought in to improve the current programme and obviously maximise the opportunity within the town centre, particularly with the investment that's gone into the market square. So that meeting has taken place and a further meeting has been arranged.
Should we record the chair?
You were copied into it.
No, I apologise for missing that email. I'm not quite sure how I've managed to do that. Is it possible to get a brief overview of what was discussed at all, please?
Yeah, notes of the meeting are taken. We will circulate those to all the members of the Task and Finish group. And I think it's scheduled that there'll be an update at the next meeting of this committee chair, just in terms of what's taking place at those meetings.
So that'll be at the March meeting?
At the March meeting.
Yep. And who's taken over the chair, please? Thank you, Dee. Well done. We look forward to a Task and Finish report of great interest, I think. Excellent. And in the meantime, I think there's holes appearing in the surface of the Market Square paving already. I hope somebody's picking that up and doing something about it.
Yes, so there's a 12-month snagging period, so we're aware of one or two areas that need revisiting. We're just waiting for Christmas tree to come down, just in case there's anything around.
They filled it with tarmac.
Where?
Well, they appear to fit. If you're looking at the Christmas tree and then you look left, there's a sort of black blob, what it looks like to me. Or maybe two or three black blobs even.
Okay, like I say, they are due back on site, so one of the assets team will be with them to make sure we pick up any issues.
Well, while we're on it, there was one question that actually came up just before we met, and that is, if utilities come in after the work's done, are they obliged under contract to replace the tiling that we've put down?
As far as I'm aware, yeah, because what they should be doing, anything they're doing underneath, they're effectively just lifting up good paving. I think the issues with where there was tarmac being done previously was because there was an issue with the actual paving, but now anyone going beneath, they're just...
So if they go in a year's time,
yeah,
that would still apply?
Oh, they'd still be expected to put the paving material back down.
Or come to you for the replacement because we've got stocks.
Yeah,
I think
it's really important.
In effect, Chair, anything they do, they should make good.
That's
make good with make good with the materials that they've got.
If there are any issues around the time, we, as I said, we will follow up.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, Chairman. Can I ask then if utility companies do fill in the tarmac and they have to come to us to get the correct stonage to replace it with, who then carries the cost for that? Do we carry it or do they pay us for the stones?
So without kind of getting into the detail of how that would be managed, because there are certain provisions where statutory undertakers can do particular things without needing any kind of permissions, and I don't know quite where that starts and finishes, but in a world where we're aware of works being done, I can't see a scenario in which we wouldn't be saying you leave it as you found it. So if they aren't doing that, then we would take recourse with that. But if there's work being done on our land, I can't see a scenario where we wouldn't be aware of it, so we'd be able to monitor that.
Okay.
I believe, through you, Jen, I believe the same thing's happened on Chell Road on that new cycle thing that is cocking the road up there. It's tarmac down, they've dug down and replaced the stones with tarmac.
Matter for the county council. I'm sure there are a few county councillors here who might pick up that particular point. At least one.
Two.
Oh, yes, two. And if nobody else got a question, then the other thing that ties in, and you've mentioned it, Michelle, is the work on Chell Road and the work on the forefront of the station could cause total chaos to the traffic because the Chell Road work is causing mayhem as it is.
So it's a slightly different scheme in front of the station, in that we're very mindful of the fact that pedestrian footfall is constant throughout the operational hours of the railway.
Yep.
So as part of the specification for the works, we have made a request that where works can be managed overnight, that we would accommodate that, because otherwise it gets tricky operationally for the railway. It's also a much smaller scheme, and the majority of the work isn't actually happening on the highway, it's happening around it. So I would like to think that the impact will be minimal, but we will try and make sure that whatever can be done out of particularly peak hours is done out of peak hours.
Okay, well, we can come back to that then when that item comes through as live. Thank you very much. What does that take us to now? Is that the... Oh, that's all the projects, is it? That aren't going to be covered by the local plan, that is. Yeah. Okay. And which takes us straight to you, Alex. And now it's the new local plan item, number 7B. You're making a presentation.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Chair, can I just say a few words to introduce, with your permission?
To introduce
what we're about to go through and to.
Oh, I see what you mean. Oh, yes, why not? Good thinking.
Because I think the local plan is probably the most impactful thing that councillors have. Everything else we do is operational day to day, sent here and there. But even on the lid, it says it's going to cover us for the next 15, 20 years. In fact, the decisions we make about our community here, our future communities, extending, creating new, or deciding not to, will be felt a century from now. So we've really got to take this seriously. And looking through the feedback to the consultation, I was disappointed that very few councillors contributed to the feedback. There was about a handful, a couple of them very good, very detailed contributions. And I would hope that whatever we do with the local plan, that certainly all the councillors here, but as many councillors as possible on the council, are properly understanding the impact of the local plan and taking it seriously. We've got to get this right for our future communities. And Alex is going to talk us through one of his legendary presentations about the process, where we are, and where we're going. Please do take this seriously. It's very important. Over to you, Alex.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, yes, I think we couldn't agree more with that. I think most councillors who are here before the election, who aren't new councillors, have been very involved with both this local plan and in many cases the one before it, and have worked with parish councils where we've got parish councils, so there is a considerable involvement even if they haven't put their words into writing. Carry on, Alex.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. So to those members whom I haven't met before, my name's Alex Yendall and I'm the Strategic Planning and Placemaking Manager for Stafford Borough, and part of my team's role is to lead on the local plan. Thank you very much for that kind introduction. So because there are a number of new members around the table, then I'm going to take an opportunity to present to you why we do the local plan, the legislation, the statutory position, where we are with the Stafford Borough adopted plan, and how it relates to those neighbourhood plans that the parishes prepare, and then I'll go on and explain the current new process of the local plan that we're preparing, the preferred options that we've consulted on, and then what's happened over the last year or so, and bring this right up to date. So that just gives you a bit of an idea. So it'll probably take about 10 or 15 minutes to go through, and then I'm happy to take questions at the end if that's okay with you. But we'll just go through and explain that there is national legislation that requires us to do a development plan for the borough, and the development plan for the borough is made up of the local and the neighbourhood plans together, and so you can see on the screen the legislation that's in place. There's a bullet point a bit further down that talks about the Levelling Up and Regeneration Act, and so that's the most recent piece of legislation that came out in October
last year. But it's positive that we've got in this country a democratically led, plan-led system, which is supported by the National Planning Policy Framework and guidance that we get from central government. But there are...
Can I just interrupt you there, Alex? Sorry. Where you say Levelling Up and Regeneration Act is the latest piece of government legislation, the update of the NPPF is surely relevant as well.
Yes, that's right.
And that's happened since whatever date you've got. I mean, that was this December, and it's critically important.
Yes, that's right. So the legislation sets out the process of what should happen in the planning system through law and how it should work. And then the National Planning Policy Framework then provides the national policy that then helps to deliver the law that's in place. So there's a bit of a sort of a relationship between the legislation and what the government policy is sets out. And then we're supported with additional sort of planning practice guidance as well. And that all comes together to inform what we have to do at the local level. And there are other bits of legislation as well that we need to relate to, not least the Environment Act and Housing Acts, etc. So that's just a brief overview of the legislation and national policy. And so coming down to the local level, we've got an adopted plan, and that adopted plan, which we've had for almost 10 years now, sets out the approach from 2011 to 2031, and then we had a part two that identified what the settlement boundaries were, where development should and shouldn't take place across the borough, and then within the context of the borough, we then got the neighbourhood plans that the parish council spent an awful lot of time working with us to get those neighbourhood plans in place, and the two plans relate to each other. But what's important to remember is that the borough plan that we prepare sets out the overall context, and then the neighbourhood plans sit within that strategic context for the local plan. And there are a number of neighbourhood plans that are still in process of going through the system. So that's just a brief introduction to where we're at, and we're in a good position as far as the local plan is concerned, because the government says that you should be reviewing your plan every 5 years, otherwise it's out of date. So officially our plan is out of date, because it's more than 5 years old. However, it can still be used for making decisions on planning applications, because we continue to have what's called a five-year housing land supply, and we're in a healthy position as far as that's concerned. So that means that our plan can still be used to consider planning applications. If we didn't have a five-year supply, then what would happen is that National Planning Policy Framework would kick in, and that would then be used to guide. So we're still in a good position locally. So as I said, the local plan sets out the strategic spatial context for future development across the borough through proposed sites, policies and provisions. So what I'm doing here is I'm explaining what the adopted plan does, but also what the new plan will continue to do. And that's to support, as I said, planning applications to deliver economic growth and the projects that you've heard about from Michelle earlier, to set the context for housing provision and making sure that there's sufficient provision for local need. And the preferred options that we went out with in October to December 2022 was looking at assessing the potential of a new garden community in the borough during that plan period, and providing certainty for residents, businesses, landowners and developers, so that they know what to plan for the future. Because as the cabinet member mentioned earlier, there are some quite significant inward investment decisions that are made involving significant values of money over a considerable length of time. So it's important that we're working with our communities and our businesses to provide them with that certainty. So as I said, the preferred options we consulted on, and I'll go into a little bit more detail on that shortly.
Just remind members when you consulted on the preferred options.
Sure, yeah, I'll come to that. So we're going through a process, the new local plan is going through a process. So what we've already done is consulted with the public prior to preferred options through the issues and options stage, and prepared a significant amount of evidence, both at issues and options and also at the preferred options stage. There's a continuing opportunity for landowners and developers to make us aware of sites that they might want to be included in the local plan, and that's useful for us to then be able to assess those sites and consider their suitability before we then move on to the next process. And alongside that, we've got sustainability and appraisal to check that we're delivering sustainable development, environmental regulations, and engaging with our communities effectively. So the preferred options consultation did take place in October to December 2022, and the timetable that was published just before that preferred options was launched is the one that's on the screen, and it's still the current published timetable in the public domain. And as you will very quickly see, some of those dates have now passed in terms of where we should have got to, and so I will explain a little bit later on why that's the case, and what's going to happen next, because there have been quite some significant changes over the last year that have occurred through not only at the national level but also at the local level. So I'll explain that. So we do need to come back and look at this timetable and go through and prepare a cabinet report that sets out what the new timetable is and be realistic in terms of what needs to be achieved. Local plan is all about the evidence, and you've got to have really thorough evidence, and it's really important because when you get, we will be examined on our local plan, and when we get to examination, that's the evidence that will be used to decide whether what we're proposing will actually happen or not. And that evidence base, as you'll see in the financial implications towards the end of the report, is not insignificant in terms of its cost. We're looking at about £700,000 worth of project at the moment, so it is really important that we get it right, and the decisions that we make are backed up and supported. So that's where we are with the timetable. So very briefly, I'll go through what was in the preferred options, so we're all on the same level, and they'll be useful because then as we continue to talk through the coming months, we've all got a really good understanding of what's in the plan and where we should be going next. So the preferred options sets out a vision and a set of objectives for the borough. It sets out a development strategy, and there's a slide shortly to show you what's included in that, to address climate change. It includes the Meesbrook Garden community and other proposals and allocations for housing, employment, gypsies and local green spaces, and then a whole range of draft policies on economic prosperity, housing, design, infrastructure, the environment and connections. And these topics all reflect what we're required to do through the National Planning Policy Framework. So, as I mentioned, this shows a quick overview of the evidence that we published to support the preferred option, including the viability of the plan to show that it can actually, the market, both housing and employment, can sustain the developments that we're putting forward. The sites have been assessed through ecology, heritage, landscape and infrastructure because schools, transport, impact on the environment all needs to be considered, and we work very closely with other organisations, not least the County Council, to make sure that what we're putting on the table will actually work and in a comprehensive way for our communities. We of course look at the responses that we've received to previous consultations, and so that's part of the work that we're currently doing. We're looking at the responses of what people have said to us, and I've covered part of that in the report, so that again that all feeds into what the new plan will do next. And then there are some topic papers that we prepared as officers as well to draw that evidence together, explain its context, so that it's all open and transparent. And all of this material, together with published material that we constantly update on a regular basis, all of this will be presented at the examination to support the plan. And then key to this is something that's called the statement of community involvement that we, by legislation, have to present and explain how we engage with people. And so there's a whole list on the screen there of what public engagement we undertook when we went out with our preferred options, and that was really successful because we got over 540 responses from a whole range of individuals and organisations, and those representations are all looked at individually and assessed individually. And they're not looked at in terms of if more people have said one thing, then therefore the plan changes. Even one response will be taken into account and can change the direction of the of a certain policy or site proposal. So it's all really valuable. So the preferred option set out the introduction, the context in terms of the key challenges and issues, the vision and objectives for the borough, and as I mentioned before, then there was a key diagram that identified where the adopted plan is showing development and then where new developments will come forward. And preferred options set out over that 20-year period 10,700 new homes, 80 hectares of employment land, and then the key allocations being north and west of Stafford, at Meesbrook, the station gateway, Stafford Stone, Lowsonland, and Woods Eaves, and was supported by showing the settlement boundaries for those areas, as well as the employment land and the recognised industrial estates in our rural areas, and some new employment allocations as well to sit alongside the housing. Of course, each year we get updates in terms of how many houses and employment have been completed, and then what's committed through planning applications. So all of that relates to the overall delivery for the plan and the overall number. And that's set within the sustainable settlement hierarchy, which has Stafford at the top, and then Stone, Beesbrook, Garden Community, and then the Tier 4 larger settlements for across the borough, and then the smaller settlements of 50 houses or more. And within that, we look at the services and facilities that those particular settlements can deliver to support new development going forward. Now, within the preferred options, we introduced the proposal for Meesbrook in previously been looked at within the issues and options stage as a reasonable alternative, and this was a very significant development in the borough that obviously requires an awful lot of infrastructure to sit around it, because it is a standalone community, and so it needs to make sure that it can deliver not just the homes and employment, but the schools, the transport links, a new railway station, health services, and make sure that it's a really, really robust and effective new proposal. And that was supported with a vision and development charter and key bits of evidence that we had available when we went out at the preferred option to show that that development could come forward, and further work is required in order to demonstrate that. So we had an awful lot of responses, which we published on the website back in February last year, and we've now been looking and assessing those responses. But timing is everything, and we found ourselves in a position just as we were coming to the close of our consultation on the preferred options that the government published a consultation on the National Planning Policy Framework in December 2022, and that was really significant for two reasons. Firstly, it was providing some proposals for what should happen with the plan making system and changing the plan making system, so the actual process of what we do and when and how came out, but at the same time it came out with some quite significant policy changes as well, particularly around where housing should be delivered and how it should be delivered across the country. A change of emphasis of it being into some of the major urban areas rather than in the shire counties, for example. And so for most of last year, because there's still proposals, we didn't know what the government was actually going to do. They consulted on their changes, but we didn't know what the actual changes were. And so our Christmas present at the end of last year was the NPPF revised version that came out on the 19th of December, and that then said, out of the consultation, this is what the new national policy should be. So as you can imagine, we're still trying to fully understand the implications of what that NPPF says, and then reflect that in terms of what changes would happen to the local plan. But I've got a slide, my last slide you'll be pleased to hear, sets out some of the key issues that we need to consider as a council in preparing the next stage of the plan before we go out for consultation. So this final slide, the government said we're going to bring in a new plan system, and when you produce your new local plans, you have to produce them within 2.5 years. You have to go through the whole process within 2.5 years, and if you're not able to get your plan in through the existing system by June 2025, submitted for examination, then you have to go through the new system, and therefore there will be further information about the new system, which will be shared later this year. But that's the choice. Now the reality is that to get to submission, we have to make sure the evidence base is fully prepared. We then had to do a publication version and consult on that, and then once that's been consulted on, we reflect on the responses and then put all of that material together for the submission. So the reality is that we would need to be in a position to publish the plan by the end of this year in order to be able to then hit that deadline. The national policy also identified that no longer will authorities be able to do greenbelt reviews in order to deliver housing. It will be up to urban authorities to use brownfield land more than they have been, and so they've set a 35% uplift in terms of places like Stoke, Wolverhampton and Birmingham to deliver new housing in those areas, rather than it being delivered in the Green Belt or in other areas. Now, there is an opportunity for local authorities, if they want to go into voluntary agreements to take additional land housing provision from a particular authority. So the MBPF is providing a little bit more information around that. For us, it says if you've got to preferred options stage, then you only need to demonstrate a 4-year housing land supply rather than a 5-year housing land supply to keep your plan alive. Well, we've got an 8-year housing land supply, so we're in a very good position as far as that's concerned. It talks about best and most versatile agricultural land being protected for food production. And again, because the majority of the local power allocations are on greenfield land, not brownfield land, because we haven't got brownfield land, then we will need to be looking at the implications of that national policy through evidence to confirm that our allocations can move forward through the evidence base and the test of soundness. And the final element to just be aware of is that during this year we're promised that new national development management policies will come out, and that will mean that some of the local policies that are in the preferred options we won't need to write anymore, because there will be a national policy instead. But at the moment we don't know what those development management policies are, and so therefore there will still be an opportunity to produce locally led policies, provided the evidence backs it up, but there will also be these national development management policies that will have the same weight as local policy, and that's completely new for the planning system. Up to this point, the local plan policies have taken the lead, and national policies provided as a material consideration and some additional weight, whereas now they will be sitting side by side with the local policies. So there's an awful lot to consider, as well as prepare evidence base for the examination. So that's where we're at with the local plan. An awful lot for us to consider this year ahead.
Thanks, Alex. Questions? Money.
Alex, through you, Chairman. How much is the reconsultation likely to cost? How long is it going to delay it? And what is the principal reason out of those that you've given that is going to be the cause of the delay?
Okay, so the financial section is as it is. So we will be moving forward within that budget, and so that provides us with the ability to complete the evidence base and also the consultations that we need to do to support the local plan through the evidence. In terms of the reason why we are where we're at, that again comes down to the changes of the national policy. And until December, we were being told that potentially we didn't need to do all of the evidence that we might require for the local plan, because the government would say, oh, well, you don't need to do so much on this particular area of evidence. And they've stepped away from that. They were going to remove one of the tests of soundness called the justification test of soundness. And they said, actually, no, we're not going to do that. You still need to produce a comprehensive evidence base. for your local plan. So again, it's all around, you're right, it's all around resources and managing the risk and making sure that everything is in place. But we're not the only ones that are finding ourselves in this position. Over the course of this last year, every local authority up and down the country has had to consider the impacts of the MPPF on their particular areas, and unfortunately as a result of that, that has led to some delays in moving forward with the process.
Sorry, through you, Chairman. So do we have an estimated timescale on how long the delay we're going to end up with?
So I can't give you a timetable tonight in terms of that, but what we will be doing
based
is
based on your previous understanding of the local plans.
Well, what we'll be doing is we'll be coming back to the committee later this year in order to set out what that timetable is, so that you're aware of it, and again, obviously, the risks around that as well.
When you said later this year,
I can't give you a time at the moment.
So through you again, Chairman. Sorry. So the estimated amount of expenditure that it's going to cost is based on its being delayed until later on this year, or is that infinite, is it, or is there a scale that this is alluding to?
So the costs around the evidence base, so the material that we need to do and the consultations that we need to do are known at the moment.
Yeah.
And so therefore, in terms of, oh well, are we going to be coming back with a much greater requirement in terms of the cost of the local plan to support the evidence base going forward, then no, that isn't going to be the position. But obviously it's important to make sure that we're doing it in a timely way, and also that the evidence base is up to date, because that runs out very quickly, and so it needs to be up to date. So again, there's a decision to be made about, well, if we do this piece of evidence base now, we've got to make sure it's still valid in, you know, by the time we get to examination. So if we go too quickly, then we'll have to redo it, and that could cost extra. So again, it's all managing that's an overview process.
Thank you.
Just before I go to Brendan, sorry Brendan, but your answer doesn't quite stack up there, Alex. If we delay too long, you said we're going to review it and let you have more information later in the year. Later in the year, we would be likely to be under the new local plan requirements, which is likely to be a 30-month turnaround. Yeah. If this work had been done and we'd gone to the original timetable, even if the work was being done and we stuck to the timetable the government's giving now, 2025, then surely we can actually complete the plan under the old system.
Through you, Chair. I'll help Alex.
Am I being confusing?
No. I think what is clear is that the timetable needs to be updated, and we will be updating that. Obviously, we'll be bringing that through to Cabinet as soon as we can. I think, as Alex has explained, since the preferred option, there's been a raft of changes at national level. We've been waiting for these changes for some time. They arrive literally days before Christmas, so we were thinking it was September, then it was October, then it was December, and we've always got to be mindful of, if we're taking forward the next stage of the plan, and we know there are changes coming to the national level, that could impact on the plan. So we have taken the opportunity to wait for these national changes, and we now know what is in the new version of the MPPF, we know what is in the legislation. I think, as set out in the Curran report as well, you know, there was a significant response to the preferred option consultation. There were, they got well over 500 individual responses, and I think it is noted in the report that there were a number of concerns, there were a number of issues raised through the consultation, and clearly we need to make sure that we are reviewing those consultation responses and making sure that we have the required evidence, but we are in a position by the time we get to an examination that we have a sound, we can pass that test of soundness, which Alex has confirmed will remain. You know, there was some uncertainty around that previously. So there are national changes and national changes to policy we've got to take account of. There is the local picture. We have to engage with members of the public and residents. They have highlighted some concerns. You'll note at 5.16 of the current report, there was particular concerns raised around the Meathbrook Garden community, and we have to renew those concerns and take account of them. Particularly, it was around the lack or insufficient evidence. Those were the concerns that were raised. I'm not to say there is insufficient evidence, but those are the concerns that were raised, and we need to make sure that we are addressing those. So I think, just to sum up really, Chair, the timetable has got to change. We have been very clear about that, and we are working on a revised timetable, whether that's old system, new system, or something else.
Mm-hmm.
But we will be analysing all of those responses. We will be reviewing our evidence base, reviewing our development strategy. We'll be coming back to Cabinet and setting out a new timetable. But we're just not in that position at the moment where we can say it's going to be X. We will be coming back certainly this year, but hopefully first half of the year. And I know the Cabinet member will be pushing us as much as possible to take that forward in a timely way. But there are some uncertainties and there are things that we've got to manage, but clearly we need to move forward. So,
okay. I'm good, Brendan. Now.
Thank you, Chair. My question was actually similar to what you raised there about bottom of page 8, 5.14, and whether the local plan will be judged under existing plan making process or the new one. And I don't think you can probably answer that at this point, can you?
Well, it depends how quick they are at getting on with the job, basically. I mean, we've had since the beginning, since 2022, with the preferred options. What Dean is saying and Alex is saying is that you've got to start again with a whole lot more evidence.
I think for you, Chair, if I may, it's not just simply a case of getting on with the job. There is a lot of evidence that has to be prepared to underpin the plan. And I think we've explained there have been a number of changes at national level, and we have to take account of those. We can't ignore them. So it has slowed us down. We have had to take stock. There were responses in the preferred option consultation that have meant that we needed to review that evidence. And as I say, we will come back to Cabinet once we've got a clearer picture and a revised timetable. And I think that's kind of where we are.
Okay. But I'll take Doug next and then back to Marnie.
Sorry, it's going to be on timetable as well. What are the risks associated with us having to submit into the new system? Is it that there would be a substantial amount of rework required, or some of the work done could be repurposed into the new system? Or do we not know enough about the new system to know what that is? Just in terms of, sitting on that timeline, is it likely that going into the new system is going to be a substantial, is there a substantial risk associated with that?
Yeah, so no evidence is wasted. That's the first thing to say, because it all brings information to the table at a timely point. And the timely point is that there'll be some topics and some bits of evidence that last longer than others. So for example, some of the landscape heritage environmental evidence will live longer than, for example, the housing and economic development evidence that changes with the number as the numbers are updated and the completions and commitments come through. So different bits of evidence live for longer, but no evidence is wasted. So it's not like we're having to start completely afresh. That can be rolled into the new system if and when it comes about. And so at the moment we're working with the fact that we've been told the new system will start in the autumn. You've got till June 2025 to submit, otherwise you're into the new system. But we haven't been given any information about how that new system will work in detail. That's to come out in the autumn, subject to parliamentary approval. And the other thing to say is that obviously the transitional arrangements in terms of how local authorities that have got to a certain stage in the plan then transition into the new system again hasn't been finalised yet. But what we need to do is just press on with doing what we're doing, and that's for what we're putting in place to.
Okay, no more questions. Oh, Moni, sorry, I forgot to come back again.
You talk about the responses highlighting several factors that you're now having to look at. So if the consultation responses have raised concerns for example, the Meesbook proposals that we've been looking at, does that mean that these haven't been raised previously? Have we not looked at the concerns that people have raised? Was that not considered once we were going through the discussion stages, the planning stages of the Meesbrook project itself?
So some of the responses will come back with the same issues. So people will raise similar issues that earlier on in the planning process. But some of the responses will be new, and the reason that those are new is because, like us all, they will look at what the council is proposing through the preferred option. They'll then look at the evidence that's been prepared to support the preferred option, and then they'll come back with a comment on, well, for example, we've looked at your plan and we've looked at your evidence in terms of infrastructure, and actually we're not 100% sure that the transport infrastructure around Stafford Town, for example, is sufficient to be able to bring forward those proposed allocations that you're putting forward in your preferred option. And so therefore, can you look at that in a little bit more detail? And so part of the work that we are now doing is we're taking the responses that we've been given and we're saying to, for example, the County Council on Transport for Education, okay, well, you have just produced this evidence for the preferred option. We've now had this response from this particular landowner or developer or a community group that is challenging the evidence. What have you got to say on that? What more can you give us in terms of supporting, you know, this allocation as we move forward, or not? You know, there may be, there are examples where a particular response has been made by an organisation that has had to make us think, is it actually possible to continue with this allocation or not? So, you know, there is, it is an evolving process. And that will continue through the next stage until we get to the examination process.
Through you, Chair. Just add to what Alex has just said, and I think you said the word evolve. Evidence isn't static. You don't do a preferred option regulation 18 document and it just stops. You keep evolving, you keep updating, refreshing, and particularly with Meesbrook, given you know, this is a strategic site, it's a significant scale, you know, new information becomes available. The next report, which Michelle will present, I won't steal your thunder, but there's, you know, clearly there are more pieces of work being commissioned as part of that. We've got the rail business case, for example, so we're constantly evolving, updating, refreshing. Consultation responses highlight specific concerns and issues. We need to review the evidence we've got. It may be we need to bolster that for the next stage of the plan, and I think that's clear what's come out of the consultation, as well as the need to review the pieces of evidence that Alex has highlighted and the various national changes that have come into play. So it's not a static picture. And we're trying to get to a position by the time we submit for examination, we're in the strongest, most robust position possible that we can get the plan through that examination and it is a sound plan. So it has to evolve, it has to change and be refreshed. Hence why we are having to take a bit of time to review those responses, get the evidence right, listen to local communities, which is really important. That's the whole reason we do consultation and address those national changes. Thanks, John.
Thank you for that. Doug, you've got another one.
Yeah, sorry. In 5.16, it talks about 2,000 dwellings under duty to cooperate. Could you give us a little more detail on what that means and what the concerns around that are?
Yeah, sure. So as we were preparing the preferred option, then we had what's called a duty to cooperate. So we had to look in our vicinity to see, are there authorities that had a particular local need but weren't able to deliver the number of houses to meet their local need, and therefore, if there were authorities in that position, then we were obliged to engage with them to say, is it possible for us to be able to assist you in meeting that local need? Now, clearly, you know, there are constraints and boundaries around that, and those relate to connectivity, transport links, they relate to the economic geography of an area, they relate to sort of the housing market of an area, but we were required to actually look to see what more can we do to support others in the in the vicinity of where we're at. Now, when the NPPF proposals came out, just as we were finishing our consultation, the national policy then said, hang on a minute, maybe you shouldn't be doing that. Maybe they should be looking after themselves. And so the government was very clear to say, if you're a major urban area such as Stoke or Birmingham, you can't necessarily go to authorities in Staffordshire and say, help us out with our local need because we just can't do it. You know, you need to work harder, major urban areas, to meet your local need in a sustainable way within your boundaries. And so that's a major change that, again, throughout the whole of last year, we didn't know, well, is the government really going to stick with that or not? And they have.
But you can continue to do it by agreement.
By exception,
it says by agreement.
You can be proactive and go.
It says by agreement.
Via a voluntary agreement, as a council, we could agree to continue that approach. Another way would be doing a joint plan with another authority.
In terms of by agreement, but I'm getting the impression that we need a solid evidence base to get through examination, and therefore it isn't just an agreement, it is an agreement and a solid evidence base. Am I right?
Yes, and the reason for that is that there's not just one or two authorities that take this position of we're not able to deliver our need. There's a whole number, and so we would need to create an evidence base if we decide to go down that voluntary agreement route to justify why are you helping one particular local authority rather than another. And so that then comes into a whole new realm of producing evidence to say, well, we think we're better connected with that authority in terms of transport links, and so therefore that's why we're helping them. And you know, those particular communities are nearer or have a stronger travel to work patterns with our borough than than that other local authority, and so therefore, so there's a whole realm of other supporting evidence that would then need to be drawn together in order to then, at examination, demonstrate why we have gone above and beyond our local need to deliver 2,000 houses to support authority A rather than authority B, C, and D.
So following on from that, this is a growth borough, as stated in our economic in our business plan on economic strategy and in the strategy for the borough overall. So we are a borough that has agreed to go for growth. We've actually received substantial amounts of government money because we've gone for growth. And so the question now is really to the cabinet member, is there a reversion of policy taking place here where the borough is decided that it's going to stop going for growth, stop building houses, or is the decision likely to be that we abandon Meesbrook and start putting the houses back into the villages, or as urban extensions to Stafford and Stone? These are the key questions that come out of the whole of this that we're skirting around at the moment, because we're getting a lot of facts and figures, but it's the actual political decisions that are really important here.
Yeah, obviously I can't preempt a decision, and a decision has to be made on a solid evidence base. Meesbrook's the heart of the preferred options, and the Meesbrook viability has to be proven if we're proceeding with it. But also, you have to have clear evidence to not proceed with it if you decide not to go with it as well. Okay. It has to be clear on both sides. I cannot preempt any sort of decision on that. That's not essentially a political decision, that's a viability decision. From there, we then have to decide whether there are communities within our borough that actually want to do a small amount of growth, and other ones that have the facilities already or need the investments to be able to do more growth. And that's got to be evidence-based again. That's different evidence to the ones that were in the preferred options. It's schools, it's transport, it's all sorts of other elements that maybe weren't there in the preferred options should we go away from Meesbrook. But even if we do go with Meesbrook, there's still a lack of solid evidence around transport especially. And we certainly can't make a
decision
before the strategic outline business case happens for the station, which we'll see in a few moments, the earliest that can happen. That's a report I've been demanding since July, and it's not ready for me yet. So there's no decision to be made.
Yeah, thank you for that. And does that
That's
mean that we don't go for an agreed arrangement with the Black Country, which was in the original provisions, to take overspill from the Black Country to provide the Garden Village at Meesbrook?
Well, of course, we did have in our consultations a lot of evidence provided that agreement had fallen apart by the time the preferred options ended. The Black Country Consortium wasn't there anymore. Wolverhampton supported the 2000, but we would, as Alex just said, be required a whole new load of evidence to be able to go ahead with that. A decision cannot be made on that until we have all the evidence in place. So, I mean, ahead of that decision, I can't preempt the decision. Once that decision is being made, then we need to talk.
Yeah, so we'll bring this back to another meeting. But there's another factor that comes into all of this, because Alex has already pointed out that our housing allocations dictate our employment land supply. We're already, I would say, short of employment land. Alex will tell me we're not, because we managed to squeeze some extra into the plan as we've devised it. If we decide not to go for growth, therefore we reduce the housing supply, we are actually cutting off our nose to spite our face, because we will not see any employment growth and commercial land development, or very little.
So we do have a lot of employment land already identified, and preferred options has got more than the housing in the preferred options requires. So there's a lot of options there. Our problem is getting that employment land developed. So from Method to all sorts of...
Well, Method is the problem. I appreciate that. And if there was somewhere for moving it, it would actually make a big substantial difference. Whether that can be done, I have no idea, but it's skewing our figures very badly. But it does mean that we don't have enough employment land. If we reduce our housing sums, it seems to me that we then reduce our commercial and development land opportunities for employment.
The amount of employment land we have is well in excess of the amount of housing supply we had provided, even in the high levels of the Black Country Consortium data. there's, whatever we do, there's going to be more employment land available than the housing could supply.
Well, we do, I think it'd be very sensible to bring that one back in the autumn or whenever we have the next meeting as well.
I did ask for the local plan to be in on this meeting because I did, in August, anticipate that by now the government would have published in September, we'd have all of our evidence in place and we'd be moving forward.
Absolutely.
So I do apologise for putting it in your plan for January.
No, no, I think I actually agreed it with Dean, so
yeah.
If you like, it was my fault because I didn't anticipate that we would be held up to the extent that we are.
Can I ask them, has the borough got an up-to-date brownfield land register?
So
yes.
As of December, we published our brownfield, the land that had been brought forward, which is in excess of what the previous preferred options had identified in development. Yes, it's there, it's up on the site.
Yep.
So
can thanks, Dean.
Quite a lot there. Just to echo that, yes, we have a brownfield land register, we just published it. I just wanted very, very briefly to return to the point around supply. Obviously, irrespective of where we are with the local plan, and I think Alex will probably come in with facts and figures, because I haven't got them in front of me, but we have got a healthy supply of employment land and housing. There's plenty of development going on at the moment and in the pipeline, and lots of developers very, very interested in investing in the borough or already investing in the borough. So I think Alex touched on the 5-year land supply, which is really healthy. You know, there are some areas, some authorities not far from here, that don't have a 5 or a 4-year land supply and are struggling. Stafford Borough is in a very, very healthy position. So irrespective of local plan, and this is not suggesting we're not going forward, because we are, and I look at the cabinet member there, but we have got a good supply. We have employment land provisions, but of course we do need to move forward. But I think to portray the picture that there is no development or there are no future opportunities, I think would be slightly misleading. I think, Alex, again, you would have the figures if the committee need them.
Well, certainly bring them back in the autumn.
We'll bring them back.
Dean, sorry.
I want to make a political statement as well here, because I am committed to housing. We need the right housing for the right people in the right places. And that fourth bullet point up on the screen is absolutely at the heart of this. If we use the best and most versatile agricultural land purely for housing and nothing else, then that, I think, is a waste of opportunity for our housing and our food supplies. I want to provide housing where there is infrastructure, where there is a sense of community, where we can build the future communities that will last us not just 20 years, but as I said at the start, a century. So I do want to make sure we get it right. I think that means we sometimes have to take a little bit more time, gather more evidence, and validate that what we're doing matches that vision. I am really glad that the government has decided that building on the best agricultural land is a bad idea, and I don't think we should be doing that. But the evidence has to leave me. My political view, my political opinion on the need for good quality housing for the right people in the right places has to be backed up by the evidence in the local area. And Alex and Michelle and the rest of the team are the ones that are helping keep us right there.
Anybody else got any points? So we'll definitely want to bring the whole of this back, obviously, when the new legislation is
just one more thing. I think if we're restricting the development land, we need to be very careful about the kind of developments that we then allow to be built on the land that we've allocated, because we've already seen in Stafford that there are developers that are going into empty spaces, that are overfilling them, putting small gardens in, sizes of the rooms are less than the national standard. If we're very restrictive on our development land, then developers are going to use the opportunity to squeeze on as much as they can. And I think that's something that we've got to be careful to prevent.
Yes.
And also, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, I don't like to see housing being built on agricultural land. But we have also got to bear in mind that the people who own that land can sell it to whoever they want to. And those people can sit on that land until they see it eventually turn up in a local plan. So there is so much control that we can have, but there's also an element of control that we can't.
Carry on.
I looked at the land valuations in Staffordshire recently, and they're actually quite high. And it's not just housing and it's not just farming. There's the environmental purchase of land as well at the moment. So land values are quite reasonable in our county. I think any extension of a community or a new community should have not just good quality housing, which some of these policies do ensure, but a sense of community, a hub, I don't know, allotments, proper green space on site, communication, the ability to drive on and off site, and the ability to walk and cycle around places. I don't know how much influence we can have at a local plan policy level. Because if I say that area has got to look like this, then in 2035 someone says, well, the housing market's changed and your policies means I can't build there, so I'm not going to. So I don't know how restrictive I can be in a local plan on that. But we can certainly publish visions and we can certainly talk about the sort of developments that we want in our area, and we will influence it that way. And to the extent that a local plan can support those visions, I'm committed to doing as much as we can, so that we don't just build isolated dormitory settlements somewhere, but we build proper communities for the future.
I think in response to that, that's the master plan process. We've been very involved with the master plan process for numbers of years now, and unfortunately, they, in this authority, we've allowed them to be developer-led, and the modification that takes place is not easy to deal with. But if the local authority leads it, you've got equal problems. So that's not an ideal solution. But it's always worth it. And we've got master plans in place for the Northern SDL. And we had for Burley Fields as well, didn't we? So that's what we do.
And there's a framework for the gateway and things like that. And, of course,
and it will, and it will play.
Has got a vision.
And also, just on best and most versatile land, that's not a new policy. That's existed as long as I've been involved in planning all my working life in agriculture.
It does seem very
but,
much strengthened.
But I have to say, they don't take much notice of it.
and just to be clear, it's best and most versatile agricultural land. It's not all agricultural
exactly.
land. It's so there is an agricultural land classification that sets out what is grade one, what is the best of the best.
We don't
what
have
is
that.
Grade two.
Exactly. We don't have much of that
grade
either.
Two? What is, you know, and I think it goes down to 3A. So it's not all agricultural land.
Right.
There are very specific areas that are maximising the sort of food production capability, and those are the areas that the government, from a food security,
we have to just make this,
clear,
I think, don't we?
Is wanting to see to protect for the future.
I think we just note this report. Is anybody got any more comments? Otherwise, I think we move on, because Michelle's dying to do her item.
I was just saying, in fact, it was very well talking about the building of houses, etc., etc., but we do not seem to have the same enthusiasm of actually maturing that, in fact, all the other facilities for that building spread is met. And we are building houses upon houses where we have no facilities for doctors, no facilities in actual fact for schools to integrate into that area and be able to service them. And people are moving into those places and then having to use their cars and travelling half the city or into the next town in order to get their child into a school.
That's where the master plan process comes in. And I think what the government was talking about, insisting on infrastructure preceding the housing building, as it were, whether that'll ever happen. I'm looking at a developer straight ahead and he's shaking his head. So I don't think there's a hope in hell of that happening.
It's common sense, but how often does common sense happen?
Because it's about the upfront
money.
Yep.
Just off the back of that, I do need to say that obviously the development opposite the Pets at Home on Beacon Side, there is a new school being built on there at the moment. There is going to be the availability for doctor's surgery on that, and shops on there, and obviously bus lanes and roads that have been widened to suit buses. So it's not that we don't provide those things, because we are, and the County Council have been working very hard to ensure that the new developments that we are seeing, the larger developments, are being backed up with schools. And obviously we've got a school on Burleyfields as well that's being built.
Yes, and a secondary school.
So, you know, in Stafford itself, we've seen the St Leonard's school that has been redeveloped. The one on Burleyfields that's going to happen, and obviously the one on Beaconside. So that's three schools in a very short period of time in my history of Stafford, all being built, which I think is not bad compared to other places, but not necessarily enough.
Thank you. I'm going to move swiftly on that note. And doctor's surgeries are a law unto themselves, so that's another one. Ms Brooke, it's your turn now, Michelle.
Thank you. So, similar but different to the local plan item, we have been planning on bringing quite a detailed update in respect of the strategic outline business case for the railway station from East Brook. Unfortunately, again, similarly to Alex, a couple of announcements occurred just as we were in the dying throes of pulling that document together, that strategically are quite tricky to ignore. So we haven't yet got the final version of that document, so I'll just explain what those are. So picking up on the point earlier about why are people raising questions now, could they have been raised earlier when they say, well, how will this work at East Brook? One of the things that we have across a number of different work streams is that the evidence-based process is iterative. So with the railway station, we started off with a very high level, and Maxine, our programme manager, always tells me off because I make it too simple when I say this, but effectively, is the railway line too bendy? Could you get a train to stop? And is there enough room to build a station? And effectively, you do that piece of evidence, and if you get a green tick against those three items, you then move on to the next level of detail. So that high-level stuff was published as part of the preferred option consultation. So that gave people something to get their teeth into in terms of what might this look like if Meese Brook's developed out. Because the evidence-based process feels like it never stops, we've continued doing this next piece of work, which is the detailed strategic outline business case, which then answers a lot of the questions that were raised as part of the preferred options consultation. But obviously, you have to, at some point, say to people, what do you think? You can't keep waiting until you've got all of that evidence. So that was where we were at the point of consultation. And this basically goes into more detail. And if you like trains, it is really interesting because you look at things like, where is the capacity to actually run more trains? Is there room within a timetable to stop trains? And if you're going to stop trains, how many per hour? And ultimately, where are they running to and from? And how does that fit in with the wider network? And then the bit that Maxine always gets excited about is, what kind of station are we talking about? And that ranges from, I think the way it was explained to us is, it ranges from the equivalent of like a bus shelter up to a community hub type station where you might have things like M&S food or similar, a bike hub, that kind of thing. So it's understanding all of that in the context of how many people the Meese Brook development would bring along, how many of those would then be looking at using the rail network, how much you charge on your tickets. It's a really detailed piece of work, and as I say, it was probably 95% done, and then two announcements came out. One, which was that Network Rail published their strategic plan for the West Coast Main Line, which referenced Meese Brook Garden Community, which does address some of the comments that came through the local plan process, which was, we don't think Network Rail know anything about this. Well, they did, we just didn't have any evidence that published that at the time. The second thing that happened, sure everybody's aware of, is the announcement around HS2 phase 2A onwards. On the basis that the business case for the railway station for having a station on the West Coast Main Line for Meese Brook is predicated by the capacity that's created by HS2, that does then leave us in a slight quandary as to, well, if you're not going to do that bit of HS2, where does that leave Meese Brook? And Network Rail just aren't in a position to get into that kind of discussion with us, because in their world, they're now looking at what are all the implications of our network if we're not doing HS2. And there's us saying we'd quite like a new station on the West Coast Main Line. So in terms of priorities, we're not quite at the top, which is basically why we've not been able to reflect that position any sooner in the draft report. There's more to it than if there's no HS2 north of Birmingham, there's no railway station at Meesbrook, because it's all to do with the Hans Acre link, which actually sits within phase one. So having said all that, as soon as we have a completed piece of evidence, we'll be very happy to come and share it with you, but that's basically why we're not at that point today.
Anything else on this book before?
No, it's just to say the other work streams are dependent on the outcome of this one, because we have commissions set up around master planning, viability, health impact assessment. Now, the health impact assessment work has been carrying on in the background, but certainly the master planning work is tricky to take that forward if you aren't clear on what's happening in terms of the railway station. So once we have an answer on that then unlocks other work streams as well.
Anybody got any questions? Is there anything being held up? Any pieces of work being held up at all?
Like I say, we can't progress to a stage where we sit down and workshop master planning ideas, because until we've got a clearer idea of the rail position, you don't really want to get too far down the road of this area would be housing, this area would be employment, because that could change. So that one can't progress. But like I say, the health impact assessment work continues apace. There's an awful lot of people involved in that, both within the borough and county council, and also external partners as well. It's been very well received, and Homes England are particularly pleased with that piece of work.
Thanks for that, Michelle. I'm not sure, I think we should have been receiving these reports. Are we happy to have received the previous report and note it? And are we happy to receive and note this report? Thank you very much.
Could we reflect on the fact that there's a heck of a lot of effort and creativity and hard work done by the officers, and without the officers, we wouldn't have got these reports, but also.
I was going to come to that. At the end of the meeting. But I'll reiterate it. We move on to the work programme. Right, this is, as my predecessor always said, this is our work programme, driven by members of the committee. And so we've got a series of proposals which can be altered and amended if you think you want to do that, but at the moment we're looking at the 5th of March, the biodiversity net gain, and business and leisure tourism, what I call the visitor economy. And on this document you've got, it says grants, and I've asked the officers to take grants off, because what I'm very anxious to look at is this, and I think we talked about this and agreed that it was sensible, is to look at the strategic place that the visitor economy holds in Stafford Borough's economy, which is very, very important indeed, and I think is heavily underestimated, and certainly historically was. It is going to be very interesting to see what the figures are that come up. But do you want to add to that, Dean?
Yeah, thanks, Jo. Yeah, so we did discuss this, and I think rather than just provide a quite limited picture in terms of talking about grants, I think a much more strategic conversation at the next meeting. So we want to look at the visitor economy and tourism in its broadest sense in terms of its economic input into the borough. I think, as you say, Chair, what the kind of strategic opportunities are and opportunities for growth going forward. We have some fantastic assets within the borough, some fantastic tourism assets and attractions, but what are the opportunities to grow that part of our economy, whether that's attractions, accommodation providers, events, and so on and so forth. So we are planning to bring a presentation to the next meeting. We are, I think Michelle and I are going to meet with officers from Staffordshire County Council, specifically in relation to the Destination Management Partnership, which I think is now the local visitor partnership. So we'll explain what that's all about and what opportunities that will create, but much more strategic, looking at the economic input, opportunities for the borough, partnerships at county level, and then really give you as a scrutiny committee an opportunity to look at, well, what can we do as a borough council, and what are the specific things that you would like the council to do, and you may want to suggest recommendations through to Cabinet to consider for the future. So it's not going to just be about grants. We may talk about grants, but a bit more breadth and depth to that presentation, if that's okay.
Thank you, Dean. Molly.
Thank you. We had a subcommittee to do with the COVID Memorial Forest a couple of years ago. Heard nothing updated in this last year. I wondered if we could possibly get an update on what's been happening with that.
That probably goes under the community scrutiny.
Is that within the remit of this?
No, I think it'll go under community scrutiny. We might just pass it on,
yeah.
Would you?
That would be great, thank you.
I'll try and think of something, sorry.
If Brenda. We are looking at future items, we've got section 106, which appears to be on most scrutiny committee's agendas. I believe this is probably the right home for it, this committee.
Could be a joint meeting, couldn't
although
it?
Although I'm only guesting here tonight, obviously. I very much would like to be part of any work on section 106, task and finish, because I think it is a big area where members can get more involved than what they have been in the past.
It's
Brendan's pet subject, so we have to have him on board.
Through chair, I think councillors, we've had conversations about that in the past, but yes, more than happy to facilitate that. I think other committees will be looking at it. I think resources want to look at it. Obviously, there's an angle to look at in terms of how much money do we have and are we using that money effectively and efficiently. But there's the other angle about how does that money contribute towards our local communities, and certainly. We've talked about infrastructure and is it delivering the infrastructure that we need? So I think, Chair, we've talked about it as a contender for a task and finish in the future. But
yes,
probably
but possibly
we'll need to go away and do a bit of work.
I think a joint committee would make sense, though. The task and finish on the town centre actually feeds nicely into the visitor economy subjects as well, so all that ties in. They're making signals. Oh, Doug, sorry.
Yeah, with the gateway being awarded money through the fund, can we get at some point a report on our place in that and so on?
Yeah.
Probably not for the next meeting, obviously, but
yeah.
Into the work plan so we can look at where we are with it, what our position, obviously it's a joint thing with lots of different people, where we sit in that and how it's going.
The officers won't agree with me, but I can't understand why all our agendas stop in May, because that's the new administration. It just seems total nonsense. But we're only planning up till May, so between us, can we all think what we'd like to do in September so that we're well ahead of ourselves? Dean tells me that the information's coming through imminently.
Okay. Well, we've got meetings in the diary up to the end of this municipal year. We'll have new dates set for May. I think the simple answer to your question is yes, we will put Stafford Gateway on a work programme for the future and bring something back.
Any other burning issues that people would like to see on the agenda going forward?
No, I wanted 106 as well, so.
That's fine. And we've got it's going to be a big agenda at the next meeting in March, so be prepared, because I think the biodiversity net gains probably going to be interesting, and the tourism should be a major item as well. Thank you very much. Now, can I also reiterate what the Cabinet member said? I have to particularly thank Alex and Michelle for their presentations, Dean for
overall managing all of us. And I also thank everybody for their attendance at the meeting and declare it closed.
Thank you, Chairman.
Well done, you've got everything done.